Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends. You're listening to Talk Straight. Your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Talk Straight is a podcast platform sponsored by Building Families and Communities Institute. During the month of Black History Month 2018, imagine with me, if you will, we're taking a young man from urban America, armed with a pistol, full of frustration and anger towards society, and ready to explode, into a 6x6 dark room, locked with you and I for 3 hours. The question is, what do we tell him? Using research from our traveling seminar and lecture series for BFC Institute, we will tell him how history, African American history, lays out a pathway of success for anyone, particularly young males from urban America, ready to explode. Join us each Tuesday and Thursday night throughout Black History Month as we share important information that can transform lives. I invite you to visit our webpage at www.bfcinstitute.com. As you go to our homepage, you will find the various links. One where you can join us live at 7 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday and Thursday night, as well as listen to archive broadcast. We welcome you again to join us, and we look forward to your involvement on our live podcast interaction.
A movement, group of people working together to advance their shared political, social, or artistic ideas. For blacks in America, over the last 152 years, the need and concern to organize, promote, or sustain some kind of a movement for many seems paramount. The latter platform allows for collective sharing of strategies to address the challenges of a specific segment of society. Over the last 10 to 12 decades, there have been various movements among African Americans, but somehow a specialty group, that being at-risk urban African-American males, is under a particular threat of social extinction. Join me tonight, your host, Reverend Dockery, as we discuss three movements and the visions of their families, or their founders, excuse me. Those movements are the Moorish Science Temple of America, the Universal Negro Improvement Movement, and I'm happy to share with you tonight, personally, the Koshi Ibri Nation. We're going to talk about them and the impact that they have, but more importantly, the opportunity that there is, as you heard in the commercial, to share with this young man that we have been taking symbolically to this 6x6 dark room and offering him an alternative to the death and destruction that he was engaged in the streets because of his anger, his frustration. We are grateful that you've joined us tonight, and I hope that tonight we grow together. And again, I want to let you know that right off, I'm particularly happy that I have an opportunity to share with you a very personal story, a powerful movement that has certainly had an impact on me personally. And I suspect that we may have some of my other family members calling in. If you have looked at our promo, you notice that one of the founders is someone we're going to talk about. We're going to get to it. We're going to get the name sounds familiar. Name may sound familiar to you. But what we'll do is our callers are lined up already. We'll be right with you. The number to give us a call here live on air tonight, 657-383-0944. Again, that's 657-383-0944. Be happy to entertain your question, your comment. All we ask is that you keep it relevant to our topic and that we be respectful of all of our callers and opinions and so forth as we share tonight. I believe that everybody has something to offer. We just want to make sure we do things decently and in order. I want to thank my Facebook friends for keeping up with us as well. And you can dialogue with us on Facebook as well. Feel free to share your comments or questions on Facebook, and we will strive to answer them within the next hour and a half or so that we have. Pastor Ricky Wallace, our regular panelist, that's been so graciously with us a whole year now and going into our second year. He's with us tonight, and we're going to hear from him as well. And some of our regular callers, we're grateful for you tuning in to us. But again, all right, without further ado, let me get to our monologue because I'm anxious to get to our dialogue, our discussion here. The topic is little-known black movements in America. Now, through Black History Month, we hear about Martin Luther King, we hear about Malcolm X, Harriet Tubman. Those are wonderful stories. But there are some more substantive things that young people could and should hear about. And we're going to get to it tonight. What we've been doing every time we've been on during the month of February of 18 is we've been offering you historical facts and stories and case studies that I've documented in my educational lecture series that we're striving to take around throughout urban America. And so what you're getting is sampling from each of those. All right. Proverbs, the 29th chapter, the 18th verse reads, "Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul." Further in Proverbs, in the 18th verse, says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish. But he that keepeth the law, happy is he." It's interesting that those two texts are together. Correcting your sons and encouraging people to have a vision so they do not perish. This young man that we got in this 6x6 box, we want to keep him from perishing. The White City, it was called. The World's Columbian Exposition, also known as the Chicago World's Fair, was held in Chicago in 1893 to celebrate the 400th anniversary of Christopher Columbus' arrival to the so-called New World in 1492. One of the many world influences it brought to America from this world fair, people from all over the world came and bringing their ideas and cultural influences. But one of those that they brought directly impacted the social, political, and religious identity of Negroes in America who just 26 years earlier were in slavery. A sultan from an area called Morocco, Africa, which is in North Africa, came and he shared with them and planted the notion in their minds that America is not the only place that you know or that you have ancestral rights to. In fact, he encouraged them to think beyond North American soil and to consider that they have ancestry in Morocco, Africa. This arguably led to many people being stirred to start movements in America. Again, tonight we're going to talk about three of them. Let's define what a movement is briefly. As I mentioned earlier, It is a group of people working together to advance shared political, social, and or artistic ideas. Okay? So their intention is to advance, make a move. One of the movements that we're going to highlight tonight is that of the Moorish Signs Temple of America, started by Noble Drew Ali, or Timothy Drew was his Christian name. Timothy Drew, known to his members as the Noble Prophet Drew Ali, founded the Moorish Signs Temple of America in 1913 in Newark, New Jersey, which was a booming industrial city. After he had a little difficulty there in the city, Ali moved his movement to Chicago and established a center there, as well as temples in other major cities. The Moorish Signs Temple of America is a national religious organization, so it has primarily religious tenets and principles that guide its membership. The basic tenet is that Negroes were the descendants of the Moorish Empire of North Africa, and therefore they had an ancestral right. So they followed nationalism and Islamic faith principles. But they mixed them a little bit with Christian theology. So they blended Islamic principles with Christian theology. Now, his teachings offered Negroes a sense of identity in the world and promoted civic involvement. So he encouraged them to be involved in your community and to be active and to see yourself as a citizen, not only in America, but universally. Okay? One primary tenet of the Moorish Science Temple is the belief that African Americans of Moorish ancestry, specifically from the Moroccan Empire, had dual citizenship. Today we hear people say African American. Well, Noble Drew Ali was the first one to suggest, after the teachings of the Sultan, that people who were formerly slaves, that were Negroes here, should identify themselves with dual citizenship by becoming a citizen in Morocco, North Africa, where you came from, as well as benefiting from the establishment of your citizenship as taught by the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. So he encouraged the concept of dual citizenship. All right? And one of the things he focused on is prove who you are. Get you a national card. So with his incorporation, what he did was to say to people that you are sovereign. As a man, you have a universal right in the world to be. And when you establish yourself universally on paper by having a national card that indicates that you have dual citizenship in America and in other places. Interestingly enough, other ethnic groups do the same thing. Irish, German, and other people, they are able to prove that they have a right to their ancestry in other places beyond America. Well, he encouraged Negroes to think beyond just being a Negro. We just learned the other day about the Harlem Renaissance, right, and how it encouraged people to do certain things. All right. Now, Marcus Mosiah Garvey, Jr., started what was called the Universal Negro Improvement Association, which was an African-American community lead. It's later called the African-American Community Lead, rather, a black nationalist fraternal organization that was founded in 1914, 1 year after Noble Drew Ali started the Moorish Science Temple. Garvey was from Kingston, Jamaica, dark, burly, robust gentleman. But he understood that those that were in that part of America, South America, in Jamaica, were some of the same people that were brought from Africa, from Morocco as well, to North America. We just had different social experiences. And you know that they revolted over in South America, in Haiti's in particular, and Toussaint L'Ouverture helped them to gain their freedom from the French, Napoleon, and that colony broke up and they became independent. Well, we're not going to get into that a whole lot, but Marcus Garvey is from this experience of those who say we refuse to be bound and to be slaves. So he brought that idea to North America with him and started the Universal Negro Improvement Association. Okay? Now, what was key about Brother Garvey is that he taught that we should organize and we should go back to our homeland. Where was that homeland? We talk about 1914 now. Then he was telling people, your home is not America. Your home is in Africa. He had a lot of problems because there were several generations of Negroes that had been taught and indoctrinated to the American way of life. They knew nothing else. And so he had a hard time. He went out of his way to get 20 ships, take them back to Africa. Didn't work, though, because everybody wasn't trying to go. So his principles and his ideas that were geared toward oneness and unity and purpose fell on some deaf ears. Now, interestingly enough, Marcus Garvey married a Caucasian woman. And subsequently, he wound up being charged with tax evasion by the Internal Revenue Service. And he went to jail. And that shut it all down. Okay? But Brother Garvey thought that to help black people, it was important to teach them to position themselves to be independent, to be free, and to go back home. Perhaps he, too, understood what Noble Drew Ali was saying about the prospects of dual citizenship. All right? He taught that one destiny, therefore, let justice be done for all mankind. Okay? Realizing that people that were oppressed, that were weak, that were confused, that were discontent, all of them shared one thing in common. And as long as they were unified, they didn't have to be brutally taken advantage of, and they no longer had to be slaves. They could, in fact, be free. Okay? So Marcus Garvey eventually passed away, and his ideas, when he died, slowly but surely drifted away. Noble Drew Ali's organization sustained itself a little bit more, and they were able to Noble Drew Ali's organization still exists today, and there are different temples across America that operate. Arguably, you know, some people, you see them with red fezes on in various cities, and they identify themselves as sovereign citizens and things of that nature. That's a whole nother thing there, but I wanted to introduce you to that movement and to the founder and their basic tenets. Now, before we open up our phone lines, let me go to our last and the one that I'm happy to share with you tonight. The Malek, Robert Lee Dockery. Name sounds familiar, doesn't it? That's because that's my father. Inspired by the teachings of Noble Drew Ali and Marcus Garvey, in 1966, the Assembly of the Poor was incorporated in Chicago, Illinois, by the Malek, Robert Lee Dockery Sr. The organization was later renamed the Koshi Ibri Nation in 1980. Koshi meaning holy or pure, Ibri meaning the Hebrews that came from North Africa. And of course, they represented a nation, that nation of Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel. And my father named most of us by biblical and Hebrew names and things accordingly, all right, based on his understanding and teaching. Growing up in the sharecropping system of the Delta region of Mississippi down there in Hernando, Mississippi, and later migrating in around 1950s to the north, he spent time in Cleveland and Detroit and Indiana, and he landed in Chicago where he took his last breath. After experiencing poverty, discrimination, and being subject to all sorts of humiliation, he subsequently participated in the Chicago Freedom Movement along with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in 1966. King came there to say that the poverty ghetto conditions of Chicago were atrocious and they need to change. And he came to bring the same things he did down south to Chicago, where Mayor Richard Daley, old man Daley, told him, "We don't need your help here." But my dad was one of those preachers in town who marched with Dr. King. Now, they were talked out of a formal march in Marquet Park, but some other hotheads like Jim Bevel and Jesse Jackson went over there anyway, and that was, and King had to go then, and there was some assaulting that took place and that sort of thing. Well, my dad was in that group of people. But after King left and what he was hoping they would do for Chicago was left to him and others, he himself formed the Poor People's Campaign. And formally said, "We're going to take rein on this thing and try to figure it out for ourselves." He and a couple other ministers in town at the time. The principal tenets of the Koshi Ibri Nation were very simple, and that is that he taught through righteous living, when people conduct themselves in a righteous, upright manner, that good things will come to them. Even though they were struggling, even though they were oppressed, and even though they were discriminated against, when you conduct yourself right, this is a powerful lesson for young men today. I'm talking to this young brother in the 6x6 room. Things may have been bad, but when you are walking right, you establish the precedent for right to come your way, and you have a right to protect that. Okay? The other principle, another principle is when people use their collective knowledge and experience, yeah, we all may be struggling, but we got a little bit of something to offer. And when we bring it together, together we stand, divided we fall. He developed a farming project based on his experiences down south as a sharecropper, and he actually wrote a grant to try to get funds for this. He was unsuccessful in terms of getting the funding, but he laid out a plan by which people in the housing project receiving public assistance could actually start their own farm projects in Illinois. He found that there were a lot of land being unused, and part of his grant was to try to bring monies for them to do their own farming, provide their own food, and even farm out their products to make their own money. Okay? He encouraged the idea of entrepreneurism and instilled that in us, that you can start your own business, and when you control your money, you control your life. Yeah, we all work. You know, people have to work. They have to start. But when you get yourself to a point where you become educated and you establish yourself, you can own and control your own time by owning your own business, being an active part of America. Through his nonprofit organization, he did outreach and things of that nature. Another tenet was heritage was important. And when a young person knew from whence they came, they had the basis for identifying who they are and where they were headed. These are things that he taught through the Koshi Ibri Nation. He had a very small group of people under his listener or tutorship. However, these are things that he constantly encouraged. He worked with the gangs. What he said to people like Larry Hoover and Jeff Ford that were running around trying to find themselves and be someone, who he counseled, the vice lords and the warlords, he said to them, "Listen, I see where you're trying to go, but the end is short and sudden for you. Now, if you learn to establish yourself and identify yourself and do things in a legal manner, the concept, the legal concept in American nomenclature, jus soli, which means the birthright of your ancestors, can be yours." All right? Then lastly, he suggested every man has a universal, very much like Marcus Garvey and Noble Drew Ali, they have a universal right to control their own destiny. And you can't let nobody get you so mad that you do something to get locked up and pulled away from the world and society and lose control of your destiny. Now, before I go to the phone lines, I want you to hear from Gil Scott. We're talking about little-known black movements in America. The number to give us a call is 657-383-0944. Love to hear your question or comments. Listen to what Gil Scott said very briefly, and then we're going to open up our phone lines.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading the charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful to have you on with us tonight. And what I'm going to do, we got quite a few callers in queue. We're going to have you sound off, and you don't necessarily have to give your name, but just I'll call you by your first, your area code and your last four digits. Just say hello to us here. But let me start with Pastor Ricky Waller. Hey, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, Pastor. How you doing, Pastor Dockery?
All right. Did you ever know that the revolution would be televised?
Oh, man, the news is pretty strong and powerful, brother. You know, I never, I guess I was in that feeble position, so I missed it.
Okay. Hold right there, Pastor. Hold right there. 309-8112. Welcome to Talk Straight. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Pastor. How are you tonight?
Wonderful, wonderful. Thanks for joining us here. Pastor Waller, here's your friend, 3072, with us, too. How you doing, 3072?
Oh, there go my guy, Pastor Waller. How y'all doing? Glad to be on the show.
This is my friend right here, 678-0405. How you doing, darling? Can you hear us? Okay. I think.
I'm blessed.
Okay. Your phone is kind of muffled, but thanks for joining us tonight. I got 404-3205 with me tonight. How you doing, 404?
I'm doing well. Happy to be on the show.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you so much for joining us here. Okay, and I got 615-3661. What do you say, my brother?
Roll call.
Yeah, roll call. That's right. Greetings, everyone. Here's what we want to do, guys. I want you all to talk to me about the monologue. Let me start with, now, with full disclosure, 3072 and 3661 and I got a special bond here. I want them to kind of start off a little bit and tell us a little bit about where they are. Go ahead, 3661. Let's start with you.
Well, my name is Con Dockery. I am the son of the founder of the Assembly of the Poor. I can honestly say that through leadership and guidance from my father has made me into the man I am today, at least the good part.
That's a good thing.
All right.
So I would allow others to share.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
All right.
Thank you so much, sir. 3270, what do you want to say?
I was just wanting to say the founder of the Poor People Movement is my dad as well.
All right. Let's go. All right. What about that, Pastor Waller?
sounding good to me. At least we have someone to admire, you know, someone to guide us, and that's a good thing.
Okay.
You know, I think there's power in the voice. Yeah.
I wanted to add something else. I'm really glad that this show is being done. And, of course, to a daughter, your dad is your hero. But I can attest to him being, you know, a great asset to many people that he didn't even know. You know, him putting his neck on the line, trying to help the community in various ways. And, man, he's one of the only people that I know about that was respected by the, like you mentioned, the El Rookins, the gangs, the pimps, the, you know, they didn't bother us. They respected him, and they protected us even. They may not have followed his teaching, but they respected the fact that he was trying to do something good, something positive.
That's dead.
All right. Thank you so much. I look like we got my good friend here, 1098, 485. How you doing, sir?
Good, good. You know, just in a little time, but good.
Okay. God bless you, man. I hope you're doing better now. You had a little procedure done, but you sound like you're in good shape there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm moving along. You know, I mean, things take time. Some things you just can't rush. You know, I mean, you can't cook a chicken in a minute.
Well, I'm sure you're still handsome as ever. So they ain't gonna never.
You know, I was just I was listening to your monologue, and I see you have three gentlemen here. You know, one of the founders of Moorish Science Temple. The Moors have been around for a long time.
Long time.
And so in Europe, there was one with the turbans around their heads, and it was the Moors that took over Spain.
Yes, sir.
You know,
yes.
Muslims, of course.
Absolutely.
You got, But it's okay. Marcus Garvey never was his fan, you know, because the thing is this. Now, you were talking about dual citizenship. Well, he should have had a triple citizenship, you know. Now, he come from over there in Jamaica. People came from up out of Africa, so therefore he should have a Jamaican citizenship and a Congo or Kenyan, citizenship. And three.
Okay.
And
that's an interesting point. And I want to come back to that if I can, 1098. You make an excellent point, because here's our catch. We got this young man in the 6x6 room, and we're trying to convince him that it's not worth committing suicide by cop, putting himself in a position where he has an early demise. So what you make a good point. What you want to do is we want to let him know, what could he get from Marcus? If nothing, then cool. What can he get from Brother Drew, Prophet Noble Drew Ali, or what can he get from the Malek, Prophet Doctor? Those are the type of things that, before we finish our show tonight, I hope that we can intimate. So you spot on it, big brother. You spot on it. Let me, if you don't mind, let me go to 404. 404, what city is that you're in?
I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, hot Atlanta. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us. You have a comment tonight?
No, I'm just listening. I'm happy to learn a little bit more about Bishop Dockery and how much of an impact that he made in his community. I work for city council, so community work, and I'm a believer. It means a lot to me.
Great. Well, good.
And can I add that 404 is a beautiful individual?
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, all right, then we'll take that. We'll take that. 309, before we get into the meat of our conversation, any comment on our monologue before we get into the meat of our conversation?
Well, I'm kind of emotional, so I'm just going to sit back and listen.
Okay, well, bless you. You know you at home, don't you?
I feel home.
All right, the first time you come, we're going to give you some at the refrigerator. Next time, you better find your way or you'll be hungry around here.
I can do that. I do that pretty good.
Okay, all right. Pastor Wallace.
Yes, sir.
Listen, here's our dilemma. Just this week, they charged a 12-year-old with a carjacking right here in the house. Attempted carjacking. He didn't get it. Had the police on a chase. And the other week, one of them told him he was going to empty his gun in the police.
Oh.
And kill his whole family. Pastor, what lesson do you think either one or all of these movements could have been translated into to direct these young men, these babies, literally?
Well, they just
if you will, talk in your phone a little bit more directly,
yeah.
Pastor.
Yeah, did he find someone in the area who was carjacking that he wanted to learn how to do it? Or how did he even get started on that? You know, it's always a starting point to anything, bad, good,
right.
Or indifferences. You know, it's
right.
Just the thought of knowing how did he get into that? Where did that thought come from? How did he actually know to carjack someone
exactly.
Or to attempt to, you see? So it all comes back to what type of example did he start it himself? Did he start carjacking before anybody else did? I would like to think that he didn't. You see? And, you know, I was 12 once upon a time. I mean, it's a long time ago.
Right.
But the thought of when you brought me back in remembrance of it, I'm like, what did I do at the age of 12? I tell you what, I should have been playing marbles or something like that. But I was watching people doing things that
kept
in my mind. Yeah, you know, and it would have been a good thing, you see? And that's, I believe he was an innocent 12-year-old kid. Grew up in seeing things that was going on in his arena, and it caused him to take a chance and say, well, I'm going to carjack someone and, you know, not know what he's getting into. And then once he get into it, and now he's captured, I guess, if he got caught, then he had to deal with the consequences that come from it. So I'm right there thinking about examples. What type of examples are we presenting to our people? So, you know, he
good
needs
point.
Guidance,
good.
I'm sure. Yeah,
yeah,
that's where I would be
this
at.
Is, 1098 is a brother that's of age, and he's here from, he's in Nashville. What say you, 1098?
Well, when I knew what I was doing when I was 12 years old, and sure wasn't shooting mom.
What's that?
Marijuana, chasing girls,
man. Wow.
Playing basketball, football, skating.
Okay.
This is what I was doing.
Okay.
Also, you know, I started stealing before 12, ended up in juvenile court. I remember when everybody else was outside playing at 6 o'clock. I had to be in the house at 6 o'clock because I was on probation. The thing is this, out in the streets, you learn a lot of behaviors. And not only do you learn a lot of antisocial behaviors on the street, you go in different homes and pick up the same antisocial behavior in the teaching. I was playing marbles when I was 6 and 7 years old. So, me, no. 13,
okay.
Graduated over to other things, you know. But
right.
I blamed myself. I was reared in a good environment. I knew right from wrong, but, hey, doing wrong was cool, you know. I mean, it was, you know.
Okay.
Reputation, you know, get the girls, you know. They like little hard boys, you know. Yeah,
right.
I wasn't talking about shooting the police and things of that nature. No, I was trying to stay away from them. But I hope.
Okay. 81, what do you say about it? I know you work with young men in the detention facility setting. What do you think about it? Comment?
You're talking to me?
3661. Yeah, 3661,
I'm sorry. I was listening to what has been said. I think if anything can be taken from the idea of leaders is what positive influence one can have on another. I don't remember the gentleman's name. He made the comment about Marcus Garvey and how in which that he had some reservations about some of Marcus's choices in terms of his lady.
Okay.
I think about young men in the situation that they're in today and how some of that thought pattern can also dictate their behavior.
Okay.
I think so many times we allow too many people to dictate or gear our thought pattern on who we should be as a person or as a leader or as someone that's of importance. And I think with being misguided, for to bring it back to the young man, who, what we can tell him to stop him from hurting himself or being in prison or being in a pine box is that if we would focus more on what I'm trying to be careful in what I say. Focus more on the positive of things to take from that versus what someone give us and make that to be our truth. I think a lot of young men are confused. I think a lot of old men are confused in what and which to do and how about how to go by getting it done. I think that was a lot of contributions from many people that wasn't recognized and got lost in the mix of things that kind of got us in the situation that we are in today. That's, that's my opinion about it so far.
Okay, okay, all right.
Well,
were you going
can
to
I just
30
add
70?
Something?
Go ahead,
yeah, I wanted to add what is it, 61 was saying about pretty much what I got was self-identity, identifying with who you are.
Right,
think a lot of the younger people, and not just the men, I mean, because our young ladies are struggling now, I mean, with identifying who they are and who they should be. So first and foremost, I think it goes back to the good book. To biblical principles, the Bible, that need to be reinstilled, just regular moral principles on life first. If you know the Ten Commandments, I mean, come on, that's a part of who you should be. You shouldn't be a thief.
Right.
You shouldn't be a killer. You shouldn't be a liar. You do you get what I'm saying? So
I
think the young guys could have benefited a lot from that, even just being in the church even.
Right.
Well,
okay.
Do you mind if I jump in for 1 second, if you don't mind?
Go ahead.
I don't want to try and dominate the conversation, but I do want to make the point that, unfortunately, a lot of the good books been tainted, not just by ourselves. Also, in the beginning of slavery, the good book was tainted to have Africans to believe that they were supposed to get a whoop or get whipped or get beat for not going against their master or going against their master.
Okay.
Unfortunately, a lot of preachers have put a very bad taste of the idea of spirituality in a lot of young man's mind because of the improprieties they had with their mom.
Okay.
Through the good boy.
I don't want to go off too far there. Let me bring us back to back to the conversation about the movement and their impact and how we might be able to learn from them. I take your point though there, 3661. Now I wanted to say that I understood where 1098 was coming from, because when you study Marcus Garvey's works, he did bring a different idiom to North America than what was in South America. And the people just were not ready for that. And I think that caused a lot of frustration. Some people were with it. Most of those people were up north. They were in Harlem and different boroughs of New York, and they were having it rough. So they can see that. They were immediately ready to move. But there were other people who had educated themselves. We just learned about the Harlem Renaissance. We learned about Black Wall Street. And we saw how that there were people that were progressing economically, socially. Now, sadly enough, Black Wall Street was destroyed within 18 days because of hatred and racism and things of that nature. But they just couldn't see it. I think that's where 1098 is coming from. They just couldn't see moving from where they had worked so hard to become in terms of being free. And interestingly enough, where we find ourselves today, and I've talked with a lot of young men over the years, they don't have a clue about what we're talking about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no point of reference for them other than what they see in the streets every day. And unfortunately, what they fantasize about is dying proverbially in the gangster lean. You know,
mm-hmm.
In their minds, they've concluded, I might check out of here before I turn 30 years old. But when I die, at least I'm going to die like a gangster.
Wow.
Here's the good news. There are some of us, Pastor Wall, who've been around a while, and 1098, who survived those experiences. And we can tell them that, guess what? That ain't the only answer. Not the only
answer. Yeah, it's real. It's
right. Go ahead, Pastor.
Yeah, what I'm dealing with hearing everything that I've been hearing is that it's always a starting point to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Once the young people, as I say, you know, get a chance to utilize those innocent eyes and those innocent ears and start to listen and hear and become attractive to whatever it is that they were seeing and hearing. And want to be affiliated with it, whether it's outside in the backyard playing a football game, you know,
right.
that you don't know
right.
nothing about, you know, whatever right. the case may be, is always that starting point. And most people, and I love what 3072 said about the Word of God, which most of us, and I include myself because I didn't know anything about it when I was young. And when you have no knowledge of the Bible, of something so simple, you know what I mean, and very worth having, you won't be able to do nothing but go for what you know.
Right.
And so
right.
this is what young people learn in the neighborhood, in the communities, you know, how to become a part of what's going on. And
mm-hmm.
and that's heavy. So we need some good examples to be going on. And once we start to put some good examples out there. Am I hearing the echo?
I'm sorry, Pastor. But somebody's phone is getting some noise.
There's a lot of
the background.
Yes. Yeah, I can hear
I
the echo.
We got a new caller, Pastor. 773-5420-24. Is that you?
Yes, it
caller?
Is.
Yeah. Yeah, let them talk. Let them talk if they will. It's okay.
All right. Go ahead, 773-5424. Welcome to Talk Straight. Did you have a question or comment?
Thank you. It's Sephora.
Huh?
All right. Thank you.
We can hear you. Go ahead, caller.
Just let them know you listen.
Hi, I'm just listening in. First time
okay.
caller.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you joining us here. Okay, so
I'm sorry.
What was that caller?
I just said thank you for having me.
Okay, you're welcome. You're welcome. All right. That's why I apologize for cutting you off there. We were just getting a little reverb there from the
yeah.
the phone. Sometimes
okay.
it happens, guys. Nicole, are you
yeah.
there with us? Nicole, are you still with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. How you doing? You ain't said much tonight.
I'm doing good.
All right, good. Good. Any question or comment?
No, I'm just listening.
Okay, great. My ladies are pretty quiet except for 372. I guess she represent tonight. But 309 and
Englewood. Englewood.
All right.
Yes, I am here. I am very. I've been listening. I've been enjoying the topics tonight, especially about Pastor Dockery. I mean, Prophet Dockery. I apologize.
Okay.
And I think along the way, somehow, a lot of the younger generation these days have lost their way because of the generations above them.
True.
There's a lot of things you guys have spoken upon, but no one has said, people do as they know.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you're not even sometimes at your best of being taught everything in the world, you still, as a young child, your life is already pre-mapped out. You're going to go through, make a lot of mistakes in life. And the forefathers, as we were speaking upon, our elders, instill certain things, whether it be your mother or your father, within us, in most of our generation. These guys don't know that.
Right.
A lot of them don't.
Right.
And the ones that's trying to be taught by younger mothers and some fathers. There's a lot of good young men out there, whether they're gang banging or whatever. I've seen them myself.
Yeah,
they
absolutely.
Take responsibility as a father figure, even though they may not have it all planned out or do all the right things on the opposite side, but they love their children.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So my point is, maybe this is the beginning. Once again, where it starts as of today, as of yesterday and the day before, that we all, as their elders, as we had, make it unity.
Yes.
Put the love back into our tribe.
Amen.
I think that's a start. Put the love back into our tribe. You see them doing something. Everybody don't always have to be scolded because as Pastor Wallace said, maybe sometimes they just haven't been taught.
That's the truth. You know, can I say something? 309, can I add something to what you're saying? You're hitting it right on the head.
Yes,
I think what happened with 309 and rest of the panel here is we feel indicted that we didn't do something right, and it hurts to acknowledge that. But you just got to back up and sit our babies down and say, you know what, I made a mistake. And because I recognize that was my mistake, together we're going to turn this around and fix it. But I need you to work with me while I correct this mistake that can hurt you more in some ways than it hurt me. What do you think about that, 309?
I think that it doesn't just, and some parents are to blame, but I think us, once again, and when I say us, I mean us, starting with the ones on the phone.
Okay.
Sometimes we got to stick our arm out and grab them by the back of their shirt, like the song said, pull your pants up. And jack their pants up and grab a hold of them and hug them and say, I love you.
Even if
I made a mistake, I ain't got to know you personally to say, I love you.
Sure.
That goes a long way with a lot of people a lot of times, young and old.
I was just telling somebody that today. It was a nurse, and I was telling her that today. I said, regardless if you know this young man or not, encourage him, because you know you work for this system, and the system, you know, just train y'all to book them in and fingerprint them and all of that stuff. But you can encourage them. Encourage them.
Right.
Somebody love you, and you made this mistake, but you can do better, you know?
Yes.
If it's no more, you tell him you love him, and he's loved by you, and you thinking about him, or encourage him just some kind of way, and let him know that he's somebody. You, regardless of him getting fingerprinted in at that time, you just let him know that he's loved, and you don't have to treat him like he ain't nothing, you know? And that's what some of us better realize, too, because when it's all said and done, I feel like we come from dysfunctional families, so we only doing dysfunctional things.
That's right.
We just do what we normally used to doing.
Yeah. And Nicole, you're so right. I think what happens is culturally, when you see everybody around you, your neighbors and the people up the street doing the same dysfunctional thing, somehow that becomes normal. It normalizes the behavior. And it's still not productive. It's still dysfunctional. But because you see so many other people are doing, you think it's all right.
But may I interrupt, please?
Yes, go ahead.
I was raised, you don't do what you see everybody else do.
That's right.
You
Amen.
Do as I taught you, and then you may not go astray, because never be a follower unless you're following something good, and you got to watch out for that sometimes. So you
right.
Can I interrupt?
And choose your own
hold,
path.
Hold on 1 second. Hold on 30 seconds.
Yes.
Let her finish the talk. Go ahead, Cyril, now.
I was always taught not to just follow, but follow my mother's instructions. And so far, it's worked out for me. And I taught my boys and my daughters the same thing. And God has truly blessed me all of my life. And I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, please.
No, go ahead. Right quickly, I have some other callers on I want to recognize. Go ahead, 3072.
I was just going to agree with 309 with, it goes back again, and I heard what 61 was saying, but it goes back again to the good book. If you train a child in the way that they should go, then when they're older, they will not depart. It doesn't mean they're not going to make mistakes or they may not stray, but they won't depart. They'll be deeply ingrained, and they'll know. They'll at least know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be rude, but I don't want our callers to get that lost here. We have a new caller.
Yes.
847-4639. Welcome to Talk Straight. Question or comment?
Good evening, Pastor. It's Professor Robertson.
Hey, good
evening. Hey, how you doing?
Good. This is
good.
Professor Donovan here, Pastor Waller. We're going to have him on. He's got some powerful stuff he's going to bring on for us. Thanks for joining us, Professor, there. Any questions or comments so far?
I'm listening to the conversation, and I'm really not hearing new thoughts, new strategies. We are going down the same path that we usually do. And I'm trying to think of, we have to do different things in order to get different outcomes.
Okay.
And we continue to do the same things over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And we continue to be tricked by the smoke and mirrors, and we lose sight of what we should really be focused on.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to give you the simplest solution. I love facts. I love figures. I love science. And so I look to science for solutions that work. And the thing that will change our communities is when we focus and we are serious about education and, in particular, reading. Until we do that, we will continue. Black 4th and 8th graders are at the bottom of the proficiency list, at the very bottom of the reading proficiency list, at the bottom of the math proficiency list, and it has been that way for a very long time. If you cannot read, you have fewer good options in life.
Okay.
May I say something, Professor, please?
Hold on 1 second. Hold your thought. Let me bring in a new caller, 504-7196. Welcome to Talk Straight. Question or comment, caller?
Welcome. How you doing? Thanks for thanks for all you doing.
Hey, Brother Mario. How you doing, sir?
How you doing?
All right, great. Any comment right quickly?
Yeah, just right quick. I was thinking about different strategies and everything. First of all, honor and praise to the Most High for sending us the prophets that we sent, like Marcus Garvey and Robert L. Dockery and Noble Drew Ali. All of those men were trailblazers in the thought of reaching back, like the Sankofa bird, you could say, reaching back into information of the past to go into the new, to take us into the new. And when we talk about new strategies, especially for the young people, you know, if you look at what's going on in the young people right now, even looking at like the Black Panther movie, people want to reach back into some sense of Afrocentric spirituality and study knowledge, and you know, not leave the Bible, but really understand where the Bible came from, because a lot of the stuff in the Bible came from ancient texts, because there was a world that existed before the Bible was in print. And I think the Black community as a whole needs to open their mind to study more and not be afraid to leave the Bible, but use the Bible as a tool, not the only tool. And I think a lot of things, because of youth, they had enough of the church. They had enough of the, you know, the things that don't work, the things that, you know, they, you know, they're leaving the church. So in order to, you know, really connect, you know, with the spirit, we as a people have to not be afraid to break the traditions that we have been set in, which were ill, you know, which were rooted in Western mind.
Hey, Brother Mario, you make a good point. Let me challenge you to respond to Professor Donovan's thought, which I happen to agree with fully, that education is key, and in terms of the power of reading. Yeah. How will you parlay what you're saying with what he's saying?
So when we talk about education, it's only a matter of time before the system that we in falls. You know what I mean? People need to be homeschooling, just to be honest and be real. Mm. You know what I mean? When you look at what's going on, they have us in such a system where somebody will be a teacher, a certified teacher, and they spend all day with somebody else's kid, and they pay the child care, you know, instead of, you know, working together.
All right. If I don't mean to be rude, but if you allow me to, I hear what you're saying, that there are problems within the public school system. But let's just assume that Professor Donovan has a culturally relevant perspective to teaching and learning, particularly what's necessary for healthy growth and development for our community, for African-American community, children, okay?
Yeah.
Now,
well,
how important do you think... Hold your thought. Don't go nowhere, Theo. Now, I think that's you. How important, Mario, do you think it is to follow his prescript or what he's offering us tonight?
Yeah,
do you understand what
definitely,
I'm
saying? Yeah, I understand. Definitely reading and math and science and actually music. See, we have to expand our base of what we, first, what I believe, what we believe education is, and secondly, we have to be able to separate what's necessary from the lies, because it's still teaching Christopher Columbus. How can we, you know, as a people really progress when we send our kids to be indoctrinated into school systems? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to teach you how to read, and they're going to teach you how to think. You know, we need to teach our own how to think, and, you know, I really feel like that's the next level for the Black community.
Okay. I hate to be rude, guys. We got a lot of people on, and I don't want to overlook anyone here. But let me go to Professor Donovan, I want you to respond to Mr. Barton in just a second. But let me hear 309. She was trying to say something, and then we'll come back. Hold your thought, Mario. Go ahead, 309. What were you going to say?
Thank you so much, Esther. As the professor said, reading is very important. I love to read, okay? But nowadays, and some of my grandchildren, most of them, from a baby up, I watch these kids do some things with a cell phone I cannot do. They do not read anything. They do not talk verbally, most of them, to people, because they're taught in T18 how to use a cell phone from crawling almost to the age of whatever age they may be. Professor, how do you do that and change that when their parents have taught them and the school system teach them? I know you have to be advanced and be caught up, but we still need to open a book and be able to see what's in it and understand it, but they can't because they have not been taught these things.
Can I go ahead, Professor Donovan? Wait, hold on. Go ahead, Professor Donovan.
Oh,
Professor, go ahead.
I didn't know if she was finished. Well,
okay.
As I said, if we can keep things, we confuse ourselves because we try to take on so much and we just get splintered and we're focused on we're trying to tackle too many things.
Okay.
Meanwhile, the one thing, and if you look at the scientific research, and this is where I go back to, let's focus on facts. Feelings are great.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to feel. It's nice to love. But let's look at the facts. The facts show that when you read to kids 30 minutes a day from the time that they are born, they have a significant advantage over kids who are not read to. These are scientifically proven facts. And so they're more likely to graduate.
Don't do that these days.
Can I say this?
Hold on one second, Khan.
Let Professor finish.
Sorry,
then we'll come to you, Khan. Go ahead, Professor. Finish your thought.
If parents aren't reading to kids, then if we understand the value, then more of us have to step up to the plate. Because black kids are at the Latino kids do better in reading. Think about this. Latino kids do better in reading than black kids.
Wow.
And English is their second language. Latino kids perform better than black kids. That is absolutely disgusting.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Agreed.
All right. Professor, hold your thought, Professor. Let me bring 3661 in. Go ahead, 3661. What were you going to say?
I think what everybody's saying has some great points. But I think we need to be very realistic. The professor said something that made a lot of sense when he first came on. He suggested that a lot of us kind of going around in circles with some of the things that that's not working. And then he suggested that education is the key. One cannot be educated if their mindset or behavior don't allow them to be receptive to a learning process. I think now what we're dealing with is emotional. We're dealing with a lot of emotional and very unruly or different kind of behavior. I think first, if we want to take a strong approach on changing the mindset of our people, we need to be realistic and unplug and reset what we have learned to be receptive kind of skills or to be receptive to learning. Not that we can't learn, and not that we can't outdo Hispanic, not that we can't outdo a Caucasian kid or a German kid. I think it's scientifically. I think the professor would agree, genetics do not suggest one's ability to learn. I think what we need to first and foremost start focusing on is a plan to readapt the behavior and the construct of what's going to make our young people stand firm and be receptive being educated. Just like Brother Mario was speaking on in terms of what we need to be realistic about teaching or turning young people on to stimulate their mind to want to be receptive to learning.
Okay.
And,
all right. Great point. Hold on one second. I apologize. I have a new caller, 615-1451. Welcome to Talk Straight.
Hey, yeah, no, I just was calling. I wanted to kind of piggyback off what the last caller was saying, talking about how, they got to be in an environment that's set up for them to be receptive for the learning. I think that those statistics are, while correct, a little skewed or misleading to suggest that it's just about reading. Reading is important, but I don't believe that it's not just the reading itself that is making the statistics where the kids do better. I think it's just the parent that is going to take the time to read every day, they're also going to get other things. So I think that's more or less a correlation of a type of parent or a type of environment, and more so than it just being the reading. The reading is important, but I think it's more important, you know, talking about them being receptive to it. It's more of an environment. You're not going to have a parent that is, like, more or less neglectful, for lack of a better word, to the child, and they're just going to only read for 30 minutes and then go back to being neglectful. You know, it's like a package deal. So it's not just the reading. It's the reading plus the other thing that the parents are doing. But, you know, once again, talk about the whole environment, they can't be receptive. I mean, if they ain't ate all day, they're not going to be listening to nobody reading them no bedtime story.
All right. Well, hold that thought. Professor, if you will, let me give everyone a chance to come, and I'll bring you right back, because I'm sure you want to share part of your research.
Can I say something?
It's on my go ahead.
It's on my head. Okay. You know,
Hold on, guys. Everybody, hold on 1 second. We got two people talking. Mario?
Yeah. It's on my head.
Give me 1 second. Let me bring a call in that hadn't come in yet. I'm coming right to you. Hold your thought, please. I think that's 773-5424. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right, go ahead. 5424.
What I would like to say is I remember growing up myself and being in a very productive family that didn't have any issues with reading to me and all the other things that have been suggested tonight. But one piece that I found that was missing throughout was somebody asked me what I need. You know, you have a lot of adults sitting around with suggestions and ideas, and you appreciate that they would even take time to even, you know, inquire as to what would make you a better you. What I could have appreciated was someone asking me specifically what I would have liked.
Sure.
You can't make me a better me without my input.
Okay.
One thing that I think would be helpful is for adults to stop pointing out what's wrong with the kids and ask them what can they do specifically to help you. Whatever your issue is, what do you think your issue is?
Okay.
And once they answer that question, ask them, what is it that I can offer you that can change this around a little bit? That might help.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Well, thank you for sharing that. We'll come back to you in just a second. Go ahead, Brother Mario.
Okay. I would like to add, too, I think we need to give the kids a little more credit, because when the right circumstances are presented, it's like turning on a light bulb. You know, for example, I'm 40. And at times I come in contact with the youth, because I do teaching from time to time. And especially young males, when they come into a young, vibrant male authority figure, or a young, vibrant male that presents energy and light and is excited about light, you know, life, they turn on, their minds turn on, because they're looking for what's next. They're looking for, who can I see myself being when I'm grown, you know?
Okay.
And so when we look at the kids, we have to understand that they want to know why. Okay, if you tell little Johnny to go and write this down and memorize that, yeah, he can do that. You know, we see that they can take the most newest technology and learn it and master it.
Mm-hmm.
The drop of a dime, because they have a goal behind it. Oh, I can talk to my friends. I can play this game. I can Facebook. I can Snapchat.
Mm-hmm.
You see, when
a lot of
people doing school, I see your spirit. No one can get a job. You know, and you're like, man, we're at a point in our society where the lies can't flourish anymore. And the kids, and I believe the spirit within the kids, are looking for what's right, what's new, what's next, what's really where we go. So a lot of times, you know, when we talk about education and we keep pushing the same wheel, you know, they looking at things different now. They even teach math different now, you know.
Okay.
So we as adults, we have to be able to take our minds and still bring, we have to give them something different to hope for other than to just get a job with a degree. You know, because, I mean,
okay,
that's going nowhere. The power is in being a boss. The power is in being your own boss. And, yeah, you know, and being self-sufficient. That's my
comment. Yes, sir.
Well, can I say something? Okay. Can I?
Go ahead right quickly. Then I'm going to bring Professor Donovan back in. Go ahead, 3072, right quickly.
Okay. Brother Mario just made a really good point, and it's very relative to today. What do you see on Facebook? The men want to be bosses. They want to be kings. They want to be this and that. But, right, why do you want to be a boss, and what kind of boss do you want to be? How do you go about being a boss?
Okay. Okay.
Just something to think
about. All right.
About.
Some of these things that we're talking about, guys, we have discussed in previous episodes. But let me say, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Pastor Wallace, still with Pastor. I appreciate your patience, sir, but we want to give our callers a chance to talk tonight. We appreciate them joining us. You understand where I'm coming from, Pastor Wallace?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, yeah, no question.
Okay, we're going to hear from you before we wrap up here, Pastor. I do want to give Professor Donovan, who raised a very valid issue, I believe, particularly as an educator myself. You've heard the comments, Professor Donovan. Will you respond to those briefly?
Pastor Doctor, there's a term called willful blindness. And when people are faced with facts, and I shared facts, and the facts are well documented, and even if we wanted to start a business, if you are poorly educated, you're going to have a very, very difficult time leading a successful business.
Okay.
Okay. If there are conversations about reparations at a meeting that I was at recently, and I said, well, if I give you all of this money, are you going to do anything different than how you currently manage your money today? So if I were to give you more money, what are you going to do that's different?
Agreed.
In this country, we spend billions and billions of dollars because people are poorly educated. And I'm just talking about reading. I'm not talking about college degrees. I'm talking about reading. 66% of prisoners are low literate. 66%. And so if we look at solutions that work, it's documented. I don't believe that. No, it's documented.
Why isn't it showing then?
Excuse me?
Sorry, go ahead.
There's a lot of things, Professor, that I believe is documented, and I believe statistics, for one, is based off some very flawed numbers personally. But I believe that, yes, a lot of things are documented, and I think you can agree with me. There have been, and I'm not suggesting education is not very key, but I think you can agree with me. There have been many successful people who had a fifth grade education.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is probably one of them.
And those are outliers. Those are outliers.
What I'm saying is the difference between those successful people and, unfortunately, African-American, if you will, people, is the simple fact some of us didn't have the startup money to be able to sustain a certain lifestyle and a certain privilege. And unfortunately, through society, and it's well documented, that in society that many people who have startup money and who have that privilege or that power, if you will, power to sustain and control that dictates the playing field. And I believe that's what the caller 504 was talking about in terms of learning, or what we find to learn to be what's real education. I agree that reading is very fundamental. We're dying over food because we can't really read and comprehend what's in it.
Yeah.
I get that. But first and foremost, we need to change the behavior of people, the mindset of behaviors.
Okay. All right, hold that thought.
Something I want to piggyback on really very quickly is just, you know, to say I agree with what the last caller was talking about. And even the next step after that, you have different sections of people. So you got the people that are in very bad situations, right, very poor people, and they have their own challenges like eating and stuff like that. But even when you have the next level of black kids, I'm young. I know how to read very well. But the reading is not changing the discrimination, and it's not changing the other statistics that I'm facing right now, which is I don't get compensated the same as my white peers. And I'm held back as far as a social level and a social class, even when I make it past the first barrier of, okay, I have basic education, and I know, you know what I mean, I got basic education and basic thought process, but I'm still held back from even being more successful than, you know, just I know how to, I can eat food. You know what I mean?
Hey, 1451.
And that's my son speaking.
Hold on 30 seconds.
Okay.
Hold on 30
seconds. You're going to have to spend your hours past.
Hold on 1 second. We need to bring it back. We need to bring it back. We have 8 minutes. Let me hear again from, because you guys kind of cut him off. He didn't finish his thought. Professor Donovan. Professor Donovan is going to be back with us in the future. On we're going to have him for a whole hour and a half. So I hope y'all come back and we can really engage in substantive conversation. But we don't want to get too far from our topic tonight. Go ahead, Professor, right quickly, and then I'm going to get us back on track to our topic here, what we're talking about. Go ahead, Professor Donovan.
Racism exists. Racism is going to continue to exist. And so the question that's on the table, and there's a short-term and a long-term conversation, because really what we're talking about is black people in this country are fourth-class citizens today, okay? Black people in this country based on results, based on outcomes. At some point, find whatever data you're comfortable with. I use the State of Black America report from the Urban League. They've been producing it on an annual basis for, was it 40-something years now? And when I look at the numbers and I dig deep under the numbers, this is what I see. This is what's there. And so we can feel however we want to feel, but at the end of the day, when you look at it from an analytical perspective and when you look at the data that's out there, It is overwhelming. The things that we can impact, it's hard for me to change how someone else feels about me. I'd rather focus on the things that I can do, the things that I have control over.
Sure.
And one of the
Go ahead, Professor. Professor speaking now.
No,
when we
take control of the things that we have direct control over, now we start to see different outcomes. When we start to produce or when we start to increase the number of black students who are proficient readers and proficient in math, we start to see different outcomes. When we get different outcomes, we start to change the narrative and change how people start to see us and how they start to treat us.
Okay.
And how we start to see ourselves and treat ourselves.
Sure. All right. I appreciate that. Listen, guys, we got 6 minutes, and the clock is going to run out on us, so let me do this. Listen, I want to invite you guys. This is great conversation, great conversation. I want to invite you guys to come back Thursday night at 7 o'clock. I'm happy to pick this up in substance, and we'll incorporate it into our next topic. We're going to be using another historical theme, because this is Black History Month, and the focus is to give us some background information on black history. Man, I appreciate every one of you calling in tonight, man. But time is getting away from us. Pastor Wallace done messed with the clock again, and we can just have 5.5 minutes to go now.
Can I just say before I go?
Hold on one second. 3072. Go ahead, Mario, right quickly, and then we'll go briefly, Mario, then 3072.
In honor of what Noble T. Ali stood for, you know, I don't think us stopping at calling ourselves black is good enough, because just I know it sounds kind of way off, but, you know, we were known for being a people other than black. And, you know, I think we need to, on the next topic, you know, kind of focus in on that, because that has a lot to do with how we're treated, is because how we define ourselves according to some treaties and things that went way back when, dealing with the Moorish, because the Moors themselves are not about to call themselves black. Okay, thanks.
Okay, we'll have to do that on another show. Can't do it tonight. Can't do it tonight. But I appreciate that. Go ahead briefly, 3072.
Yeah, I was just going to thank the professor for coming on, and I partially,
absolutely,
not completely, but I partially agree with what he's saying. We do. I mean, if our kids aren't taught to read, how can they understand, like he's saying, the concept of a business? How can they better manage their money? How can they educate their children that's coming up next? While at the same time, we do need to change the mindset and the constructs of the whole thing, the whole overall thing. And I'm just glad that everybody was able to call in tonight. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Great.
Listen, let me say this in our next 4 minutes here, and we're going to bring Pastor Wally in. Thank you all again for calling. I want to say this. What I heard in all the conversation is we're talking about education. Now, it's important to understand that education is a process that deals with teaching and learning. The real question when we talk about culturally relevant learning and teaching is, what is the content being taught? Now, you learn to read from 0 to 3, and from 3 on, you read to learn. There's a vast wealth of knowledge of things that you can learn about. The question is, what are we teaching our children? When we look at other ethnicities, they focus on teaching them a sense of heritage and identity. Now, the catch is, what are we teaching? Unfortunately, I think it's well documented that in the public school system, the sense of heritage and identity and purpose is lacking for particularly African-American children. But that's a whole other conversation. Professor Donovan is going to come back with us, and I'll be sending out a promo on his coming. We'll try to find the best time to fit his schedule there. Hopefully we can get a squeeze him in before Black History Month is out. Appreciate you, sir. Let Pastor Wally, you've been patient, man. 309, thank you. 3072, thank you. 3661, thank you, brother. I appreciate you joining us. As well as 5424, great comment, 5424. Appreciate you, as well as caller here at 1451, and Professor Donovan again, who's going to come back with us here. Pastor Waller, give us a closing word, man. We're down to 2 minutes, man. Golly.
I see. Yeah, you all laid it down. Thank God for all the callers, everybody who had a chance to come and had their singing. I was on my way into a prison. I'm not here in Harding Place right now, on my way into a prison. So when I think about that, the Bible, about Satan, the Bible says, unless Satan get the advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. Satan will use somebody who's smart. He'll use somebody who's dumb. He don't care nothing about it. All he wants you to do is get into that trap. And so I'm going in here at a place that people are in a trap on the inside, but there's a lot of people on the outside that's not even locked up behind bars but still in a trap. And that's the thing we got to do. We got to bring some information to the streets and let these people know how to get free from what they're caught up into. And I don't think it boils down to how smart you are, because the enemy don't care nothing about how smart you are. He just wants you to come into the trap and like what he has to offer. And that's what we have to work on, you know, and stand firm on it. So thank God again, man. Keep doing it.
All right. Guys, thank you again. And we're last minute. www.bfcinstitute.com is our webpage. Please go there. Learn about what we're trying to do and support our cause. I want to thank again all of you for joining us tonight and encourage you to come back Thursday night. I'm going to put a show together that leaves room for all of these conversations. I've made notes on what we've been talking about. And I particularly want to hear from this caller in Chicago, 5424. She said something. I ain't through with you yet, 5424. Thank you for joining us tonight.
I'm ready.
All right, all right. Come join us again at 7 o'clock Thursday. Great conversation, great conversation. And we'll be back Thursday, guys. The clock is going to cut off on us. Just join us for another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. Thank you all again, and we will see you then.
Wow. That was really
but when stop going, stop.